Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Michael is off tonight. I will be filling in for him. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I just want to thank you for the wonderful honor and opportunity of filling in for you again tonight. I can't tell you how proud I am to be filling in for you. And moreover, and maybe more importantly, I want to extend my heartfelt congratulations to you on another blockbuster, another bestseller, Trickle Down Tyranny. I am planning to write a book review on it. Can't wait to get my own copy of the book and read it and do a review of it in the Washington Times. It is now number 2 on the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list. Last week, it was number 3 on the New York Times. It is skyrocketing up the charts. And Michael, I think you've done it. The phrase to me, trickle-down tyranny, is brilliant. I think you've captured the essence of Obama and his regime. And buddy, again, I just want to congratulate you on another stellar success. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest sizzling must-read stories you cannot find anywhere else. And in particular, the story I want to draw your attention to, and it is really the story of the hour and the story of the day, and that is George Zimmerman. You go to michaelsavage.com. A photo has now been released, an exclusive photo obtained by ABC News, which apparently shows George Zimmerman's head, his skull, several minutes right after the encounter and altercation with Trayvon Martin, in which Trayvon Martin, a 17-year-old black teenager, was shot and killed. You can clearly see in the photo that Zimmerman has 2 holes in his head, bleeding. There is a huge lesion at the crown of his head. Clearly, there was a major altercation. There was a fight. He was badly hurt. And this was taken by somebody who didn't see the fight, but heard about it and then came right afterwards. Took a picture of it. It has now been given to ABC News, and apparently the person who took the picture says he spoke with Zimmerman, and Zimmerman said to him, "Can you please call my wife?" And he said, "What do you want me to say?" And he said, "Look, dude, I just shot somebody here. Just tell her that." And he looked dazed. He looked out of it, according to the person who took the picture. And here is the issue. According to Harvard Law School's Alan Dershowitz, a prominent liberal, somebody who's been in Harvard for decades, the affidavit that was used to be served against Zimmerman, charging and indicting him for second-degree murder, did not include information about this photo. And Dershowitz has said repeatedly, and now he's saying again, why did the special prosecutor, Angela Corey, not mention this photo, not mention the extensive damage to Zimmerman's skull, not mention the blood, not mention the lesions, not mention the fact that there was clear, visible signs of a fight between Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. And according to Dershowitz, this indictment on second-degree murder, now remember, this is a key point. Second-degree murder means it was a premeditated attempt to kill somebody. It was a deliberate, premeditated attempt to murder somebody. According to Dershowitz, that indictment was so full of holes, it was practically laughable. Now Dershowitz has said, with this photo coming out, which obviously the prosecutor's office should have known about and probably were aware of, but had a moral and ethical duty to include it in their indictment, and they didn't. That indictment, according to Dershowitz, is not only stupid, it is immoral, because it is an attempt to suppress part of the truth of what happened. And then today, Zimmerman showed up for what everybody has been waiting for, his bond hearing. And for weeks, you have seen Al Sharpton go down to Sanford, Florida, and threaten that there will be an escalation of protests and of riots unless Zimmerman was charged with murder, unless the special prosecutor charged him, indicted him for the killing and murder of Trayvon Martin. You have seen the new Black Panther Party putting out a $1 million bounty on the head of George Zimmerman, saying wanted dead or alive. A bounty on somebody's head, which is illegal in America? If you or I or Michael Savage or anybody else put a bounty on anybody's head for $1 million or any number, $500, $1,000, saying wanted, dead or alive, we would be arrested. The FBI would swoop down our house so fast you wouldn't believe it. And yet, Eric Holder does nothing. Silence. Silence. Louis Farrakhan vows that there will be retaliation unless Zimmerman is tried and convicted and imprisoned. The President of the United States deliberately politicizes this issue and in a stunning press conference says, if I had a son, he would look just like Trayvon Martin. Really, Mr. President? I mean, you're such a messiah now, you can even tell what your son would look like? Deliberately fomenting racial tensions. The Congressional Black Caucus going berserk. Maxine Waters, that Marxist from California, that rabid racist, going on and saying this was a hate crime. The liberal media jumping on board. And have you noticed now? Suddenly they've invented a new category. I've never heard of this category. He's a white Hispanic. Suddenly Hispanics are not Hispanics. They're white. They're white Hispanic. And so Zimmerman now comes for the bond hearing. Will he be released? And the judge now listens to the argument. Robert Zimmerman, George Zimmerman's father, had to testify on his son's behalf, saying he's not a violent man. He's never done any violence in his past. He's an upstanding member of the community. His wife vouches for his character and says he, in fact, mentors young black kids. He's not a racist. He's a good man. But they had to do it by phone because they feared for their lives. They feared if they entered the courtroom, they would be killed. They would be shot. And then, in a stunning development, George Zimmerman takes the stand. And you can basically hear a pin drop in the courtroom. And Zimmerman, his lawyer, Mark O'Mara, says, my client has something to say. And this is what he says. Boys, roll it.
I wanted to say I am sorry for the loss of your son. I did not know how old he was. I thought he was a little bit younger than I am. And I did not know if he was armed or not.
And that's it. Zimmerman was there in handcuffs. He had chains around his waist. He was in a dark suit and tie. He looked gaunt. He's lost a lot of weight. He seemed under tremendous stress. Frankly, he looked a bit stunned and shaken. But he delivered his apology. And immediately, the parents of Trayvon Martin and their lawyers said this was an insincere, disingenuous apology, an attempt by Zimmerman and his lawyer to play to a potential jury and to make their client seem sympathetic. Now, I'll be honest with you. To me, it seemed like a straightforward apology. This is a man who wanted to apologize in private. The parents didn't want to meet him in private. And he said, look, I just want to get the record straight. I didn't want to kill him. I didn't know he was that young. And I am really sorry that this boy is dead. It struck me as a straightforward apology. But my question to you is this. Do you believe the apology was sincere? Was it an authentic, real apology? Or did he strike you as insincere or disingenuous? What do you hear? What do you read into this apology? Was this a political attempt to play to the public, to play to the potential jury pool? Or do you sense real remorse and a sense of regret on the part of George Zimmerman? 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe that Zimmerman was genuinely sorry? I want to hear from you. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I wanted to say I am sorry for the loss of your son. I did not know how old he was. I thought he was a little bit younger than I am, and I did not know if he was armed or not.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. That was George Zimmerman. He has been released on bond, or he will be in the next couple of days. $150,000. The family's in the process of getting that money, and he should be released. It looks like he'll be spending time out of state for fear for his life. However, in a shocking development, he took the stand, and you heard him. He delivered a straight apology to the family of Trayvon Martin, especially the mother and the father. Do you believe Zimmerman's apology was legitimate? Do you believe it was sincere? Do you believe it was authentic? What do you read into it? I want to hear from you. Ken in Michigan on line 5, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah,
my pleasure, Ken.
I make two observations regarding the whole George Zimmerman case down there. The first point, unfortunately, it is clearly being used as a political diversion by those on the left because they know that we're in the political season and the president can't win on his record, so they got to divert the attention of the American people. That's the first thing I've noticed. But to answer your question, I do believe that his apology is legit. I don't see any evidence that this was in any way premeditated. I believe that perhaps something got out of hand, but I just don't see, like I said, there's no evidence of premeditation. So, yes, I take his apology.
Thank you for that call, Ken. Look, I just want to clarify something I had said earlier. I slightly misspoke. First-degree murder is a premeditated, cold-blooded killing. That's Second degree is deliberate intent. In other words, did he deliberately intend, or anybody, she, deliberately intend to kill that person? That's what Angela Corey, the special prosecutor, is alleging. I'll be frank with you. I think it's an overstretch. I think the charges should have been manslaughter. If you're going to have any charges, it's manslaughter. It's very what you've seen in the indictment. Now, we'll see. The case is going to unfold. We're going to see the evidence the prosecution has. But from everything we know, George Zimmerman did not go out there looking to kill Trayvon Martin. And so now we have to let the courts play itself out, let the judicial legal process play itself out. But what nobody is commenting on is this. Why did Robert Zimmerman have to testify by phone? Why did George Zimmerman's wife, Sheila Zimmerman, have to testify by phone? They are living in fear for their lives. Look at George Zimmerman. I was just telling this to Beowulf, the executive producer, while we're on break. He's lost 100 pounds. He looks gaunt. He looks nervous. He looks in mortal fear for his life. And what he's thinking is this. I don't care if it's manslaughter or second-degree murder or first-degree murder. If I end up going to prison, I'm going to get shanked. If I end up going to prison with all of the racialist hatred that's now been stirred up, with the Al Sharptons and the New Black Panthers and the Jesse Jacksons and the Congressional Black Caucus and the Barack Obamas and the Eric Holders now going in and inflaming racial passions and inciting racial tensions and turning this guy into a poster child for racism in America, can he even get a fair trial? Where are they going to get the jury from? Even if he's acquitted, will somebody not shoot him because of all the racial hatreds that have been whipped up? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. What do you make of George Zimmerman's apology? Jeff Kuhner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Go to michaelsavage.com for the latest on the George Zimmerman case and other must-read stories. 1-800-449-8255. What did you read? What did you sense? What was your take on George Zimmerman's stunning, dramatic apology to the Trayvon Martin family today? I want to hear from you. Sharia in Florida on line two, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir, for having me. And you're doing a wonderful job, as Mr. Savage does always. I'm a Black American, as you said, in Florida, and obviously we've encountered an enormous amount of incidents with regard to police shootings and things of that sort on our young Black youth. Let me just say as well, I'm an independent, so I'm not talking on the lines as far as my opinions, as far as race. I do believe that the Jesse Jackson and the Al Sharptons are opportunists, and they have, again, taken advantage of a situation that I do think needs the attention of the world, in so much as not necessarily Zimmerman himself. I didn't hear his apology, and I believe that he was sincere. However, I think the issue here is not so much his sincerity now, but the issue was his intent at the time of this incident. Once the police officers told him to back off and said to him that we've got it, back off, he should have taken their instructions at that point. He took it upon himself to pursue this situation. And just as the stand your ground rule applies to Zimmerman, it also applies to Trayvon Martin. And I believe that Trayvon Martin saw the gun, because he did have it in his possession. And I believe, as his girlfriend said, he feared for his life. This man was watching him. He saw the man watching him. He saw the man approaching him. And I believe if he did strike first, he struck in his defense after seeing this guy's gun. And I think the issue here is not going to be whether or not Zimmerman had a gun. I don't believe the issue is going to be whether or not he was hit in this altercation. I believe it's going to be whether or not he pursued this and he himself.
You nailed it. No, Sharia, you nailed it. That's going to be the issue. My question to you is this. Where is the evidence? How do you know that Zimmerman was the one who pursued Trayvon Martin? Because that's what's at issue here. And my understanding is there's conflicting evidence on that. That's why you need this court case. That's why you have to have all the evidence presented. Why are you so sure that it was Zimmerman that was pursuing Trayvon Martin the whole time?
Because Zimmerman said that when he initially saw Trayvon Martin, he was walking between the buildings, and he was in his car. As far as I know from the picture that I've seen, that's virtually impossible. Because Trayvon Martin was in between two buildings, and from where Zimmerman said he was, it was impossible for him to see that. The only way he could have seen Trayvon Martin is if he was on foot walking and saw him. And that was
okay. Now, Sharia. Now, look. You're right. But here's the nub of the issue, and this is the crux of the case. It's basically we're looking at maybe a couple minutes, and all this huge altercation. It comes down to these few minutes. Zimmerman is pursuing Trayvon Martin. It's raining outside. They've had a series. Context is everything. They've had a series of burglaries in that entire Sanford area. It's been decimated. I mean, crime, robberies, armed burglaries. The area is not a lily white community. As you probably know, it's majority minority, meaning over 50% of the residents are either Hispanic or Black. Zimmerman, the reason why he formed the neighborhood watch team or was part of it was because they were basically being plagued by criminals. So he sees a kid, doesn't know initially the race of the kid, in a hoodie, in the rain. He says, I don't recognize that person. Seems to be walking a little strange, a little funny. He's pursuing the child or whatever, the 17-year-old, the teenager, Trayvon Martin. He then calls the police. The dispatcher asks him, what is the race of the child or the teenager? And he says, I don't know. And he starts looking closer and closer. And he says, oh, I think maybe Black, white. No, black. He's Black. And then he loses track of Trayvon Martin. So he gets out of his SUV. And this is the nub now. He starts pursuing Trayvon Martin. Because now he's thinking, oh, I've lost track of him. Maybe he is a burglar. Maybe he's going to break into somebody's house. I don't know. He starts pursuing. He tells the dispatcher, I am pursuing Trayvon Martin. The dispatcher says, sir, we don't need you to do that. The cops are on their way. Go back. Now, according to Zimmerman and according to one eyewitness, now, again, there's conflicting testimony because the girlfriend says something different. Trayvon Martin's girlfriend says something different. But according to Zimmerman and according to a witness, Zimmerman goes back to his SUV. He's going back. He's no longer pursuing. And then according to Zimmerman and one eyewitness, who is a 13-year-old kid, that's Trayvon Martin then doubled back. Now, Trayvon Martin may have felt stalked. He's thinking, who's this guy pursuing me? Why am I being pursued? Does this person want to hurt me? And so he then doubles back. And according to Zimmerman and the witness, that's when Zimmerman says he was sucker punched. That's when he was dealt a massive blow to the head, basically decked, fell on the ground. Martin jumped him. Martin began to pounce on him. Beat him, smash his face in, grab his head, smash it on the sidewalk. There's grass stains on his back. Now, the 13-year-old kid says he did not see the shooting. Up until that point, he saw Trayvon Martin on top of Zimmerman, beating Zimmerman. Zimmerman would later say to the police, I was going to end up a vegetable. I feared I was going to end up in a diaper for the rest of my life. That's why I felt it was a legitimate self-defense shooting. The witness, though, his dog was about to run out of the house, turned around to protect his dog from running out, and that's when the witness heard a shot. So the question is, who was the instigator? Did Zimmerman back away, go back to the SUV, and then was he then pursued by Trayvon Martin, where they had a verbal altercation, and then what happened was he was sucker punched, and then Zimmerman thought his life was in danger and he shot him. That's the essence of the case. Now, this is what I draw from all of this. We're going to find out exactly who did what. We're going to get to the bottom of this. But there's a couple points that need to be said. First of all, the issue of race is irrelevant in this case. Because number one, Zimmerman, which nobody mentions, he's suddenly white Hispanic. Well, he's also Hispanic black because he's partially black. He's got black family members. His best friends are black. He spends his time mentoring black kids. He didn't even know initially that this kid was black. So the issue of race has nothing to do with this. This, if anything, if you want to play the race category argument, this is a minority on minority crime. One. Two. And most importantly, why the rush to judgment? We haven't learned from the Duke lacrosse case. Nobody knows the full circumstances or the evidence in this case. But that's irrelevant. Everybody is using this for their own crass political ends. The White House is using it to galvanize the African-American vote. Eric Holder is using it to pursue his racist ends at the Justice Department. Al Sharpton, who has a TV show on MSNBC, you want to talk about a conflict of interest, he's supposed to be a journalist. And he's, in fact, inciting potentially riots. He's leading protests. So everybody is exploiting the corpse of this. I'll tell you why. Because they right away run out with 8 to 72 hours. She's already traded. She's bought up a George, whatever, TrayvonMartin.com. She's bought up email addresses. She's brought up the use of his name, trademarking his name to put on T-shirts, to put on sweatshirts, to put in rap songs. Are you kidding me? Nobody cares about justice in this case. And no one's going to tell me it's not political. There is so much pressure being put on the governor of Florida. That's why the special prosecutor was called. So there is now massive political pressure on this case. And you know what's happened? We don't even know if we can have a fair trial. Because God forbid, what happens if Zimmerman is going to be a repeat of Rodney King? This is why it's been blown completely out of proportion. Instead of leaving it as a local law enforcement matter, everybody has now escalated this into a national racial crisis. That's the tragedy here. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Linda in New York, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Oh, hello. Good evening. I have a question about why in this apology, I don't know whether the lawyer knew what the apology was going to be, Mr. O'Mara, why Mr. Zimmerman said, I didn't know whether he had a weapon or not. Now, it would seem to me that could mean from the moment that he noticed Trayvon Martin, in which case, once Mr. Zimmerman called the police, not knowing whether Trayvon Martin had a weapon, it would seem to me to have been a sane act to retreat.
No, you're right. I mean, look, Linda, look, let me be very candid with you, okay? This is what happened. I'll tell you, all of you, exactly what happened. I know it. I've investigated this case. I've talked to people. I will tell you exactly what happened. What you had, this has nothing to do with race. This has nothing to do with black men being killed. This has nothing to do with white-black relations. You know what this was? You have a 17-year-old teenager who's on the phone with his girlfriend late at night, 11 o'clock, and he's being stalked, and he's afraid, and his hormones are out of control. And he's feeling a lot of nervousness and anxiousness. And you have a 28-year-old student, criminal law student, who's trying to play super cop. And he's afraid, because the neighborhood has been burglarized. And so you have a man who thinks he's playing super cop pursuing a 17-year-old kid. Now, if I was in that SUV, you make a phone call to the dispatcher, you call 911, you say there's somebody strange, I don't recognize this person, got a hoodie on, so here's his height, I think he's black, please check it out, I stay in the car. No, he's got to play super cop. Then the 17-year-old, instead of just running home, which is what I would have done, he's 17. And I know teenagers, and this is Florida in particular, I have family in Florida. Everybody's in everybody's face. Everybody has to feel the need to tell everybody off. Oh, he's following me. Is he following me because I'm black? I'm going to show him. That's what it is. Everybody's got an attitude. I'm going to go back and teach him a lesson. And so mouths start flapping. One guy's telling the other one off. The other one's telling the other one off. And before you know it, fists are flying and somebody gets shot. This is the Trayvon Martin case in a nutshell. And it happens in this country every day, all the time. It is sad. It is tragic. But I hate to tell you this. It's not worth the soul searching that Obama is telling us. It isn't. And from this, now white America is being indicted. Black America is seething. And this country is being polarized along race. When you know what you had happen? You had two punks who didn't know what they were doing. That's what this is in a nutshell. 1-800-449-8255. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. Paul in California, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
You know what? I just wanted to say, you know, I was down in L.A. working when all the Trayvon Martin stuff broke loose. And I was sitting watching all of that. And then on the local news, there was a 17-year-old kid murdered. Or not murdered, shot, I guess murdered, right out of high school at lunch hour. But we never heard anything else about that. And I'm just thinking it's kind of like picking and choosing a little. You know, what are we, is that what we've come to? We just, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm a father, and it's a shame that any child gets shot. But, you know, why are we focusing on one and not another?
Look, Paul, my heart goes out to the parents of Trayvon Martin. I have a beautiful 2-year-old boy. My God, if he died at 17, if he was shot in some altercation, it would rip my heart out. That they want justice, I understand. But the answer to your question is this, because Al Sharpton didn't get on it. Jesse Jackson didn't jump all over it. People weren't exploiting it for their own political purposes. In Chicago, there is a slaughter of young black men going on. Mostly black-on-black crime. Nobody says anything. Baltimore, Washington, where I live, here, the nation's capital. I drive through Northeast every day. It's a war zone. It's an absolute war zone. Girls, 10, 11, 12, African-American girls, shot by gangbangers just for going to school. I don't see Al Sharpton. I don't see Louis Farrakhan. I don't see President Obama saying, oh, we have to search our soul. If I had a daughter, or sorry, if I had another daughter, she would look like this person who was just killed 2 weeks ago. They don't, that's the thing, is that now we are exploiting dead bodies for what? To win re-election? But it goes deeper than that. I was just talking about this again with the producers off the air. It's a culture. It's the way we are as Americans now. And let me give you one classic example. Florida in particular, I have to tell you, is especially bad. I have family in Florida. My sister lives there with her husband and my two nephews. I've gone to Florida many times. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa Bay, but especially Fort Lauderdale, Miami. Everybody's running at the mouth. Everybody's cutting each other off. Road rage. Cars are being towed. Altercations at the mall. Altercations at school. Everybody feels they got to get the last word in. To the point, up to and including my nephew, 6 years old. I love him to death. 2 years now he's been in Florida. He's like a changed kid. We go to an ice cream store to have ice cream. My sister is with me. I'm there. My nephews are with me. My wife is with me. We're enjoying ice cream. There's a couple of 12, 13, 14-year-old kids, a pack of them. They're eating ice cream. Now, my nephew is a very energetic kid. He's bouncing off the walls. He's doing all sorts of things. So these kids find it funny, and they're laughing. I think they're just laughing at his antics. But my nephew, he must have picked this up in school, he thinks they're laughing at him. Now he's six. These kids are 12, 13, 14. They could kill him. Right away. I don't know where this came from. You looking at me. You laughing at me. This is my nephew. You laughing at me. He's going to those kids. You laughing at me. And he starts to open the door like he's going to rush him and fight him. And I grab him. I go, Andrew, what the hell is wrong with you? First of all, if people laugh at you, you ignore them. You meet jerks every day in this life. You don't pick a fight. But number two, son, look at them. There's four or five of them. They're twice your size. They'll break you in half. This, in a nutshell, is Florida, is much of America, is teenage culture, is frankly culture for many Americans now. Everybody's got an attitude. Look at reality television. Everybody's going nose to nose, flapping their mouth, fist fights. Everybody's fighting. Well, what's going to happen? One day, if my nephew continues in that Florida culture, that school teenage culture of running your mouth, he's going to run into a pack of kids and someone's going to have a gun or a knife. My friends, that's what happens. There's 300 million people in America. Many of them are jerks and idiots. Avoid them. Don't start fights with them. It's called common sense. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My main message is to the parents of Trayvon Martin. You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. And, you know, I think they are right to expect that all of us, as Americans, are going to take this with the seriousness it deserves and that we're going to get to the bottom of exactly what happened.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight. He will be back refreshed, recharged, ready to go. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, thank you once again for having me sit in and fill in for you tonight. I can't tell you how much I enjoy it and what a privilege it is. Go to michaelsavage.com. for the absolute latest stories that, frankly, you can't find anywhere else, must-read stories, sizzling stories that will knock your socks off. And in particular, if you haven't bought Trickle Up Tyranny, Michael's latest blockbuster book, you are missing a real treat. It is number two on the Washington Times bestseller list. It is number three on the on the New York Times bestseller list. It is, I think, going to have a major impact on the election campaign. Trickle Down Tyranny, following his previous bestseller, Trickle Up Poverty. It's a 1-2 punch, a body blow aimed at the Obama administration. Michael, congratulations. We have been talking about the Trayvon Martin case. You heard just we came in, coming in at the top of the hour, the clip played, President Obama saying if he had a son, he would look just like Trayvon Martin. With him and with the administration, everything has become political. A boy is dead, it's political. Talking about women's health care, it's political. A contraception mandate, it's political. Ann Romney having worked at home and being a stay-at-home mother, political. From now until November, the president is going to exploit every possible wedge issue to galvanize and gin up his base in a desperate attempt to retain his grip on power. And he is now barnstorming across the country, giving rally after rally after rally. And recently, he was in Ohio at a community college where he said, you know, this election is going to be about two different visions of America. My vision, the vision of supposed compassion and liberalism and of economic fairness, or those cold, mean-spirited, hard-hearted Republicans who just want the wealthy to thrive and the 99% to starve. Here is Obama, in his own words, in Ohio just a few days ago, playing the class warfare card. Boys, roll clip 10.
There's always going to be arguments in Washington, but this one is different because we're talking about the central challenge of our time. Right now, we have two competing visions of our future, and the choice could not be clearer. And let me say, those folks on the other side, I am sure they are patriots. I'm sure they're sincere in terms of what they say, but their theory, I believe, is wrong.
Yep, they're wrong, but you're right. Right, Mr. President? All of the unemployment, record on people on food stamps, record people on welfare, record people on unemployment insurance, record debt, record deficits, record destruction, all of this economic and fiscal destruction, it's working. You're right, Mr. President. You're brilliant. Keep it up. You're brilliant. But instead of defending his record, if you've noticed, he never defends his record. He doesn't defend the jobs that have supposedly been created, because there have been any. He doesn't defend his stimulus because it failed. He doesn't even defend his signature piece of domestic legislation, Obamacare. It's even named after him. You would think he didn't even pass it. He won't even mention it. But he does talk about one thing over and over and over again. And that is Mitt Romney's wealth. And that is the wealth of Mitt Romney's father. And so in that very same speech in Ohio, now he went personal. Now, all of a sudden, Barack Hussein Obama is the man of the people, the man who came out of the slums, out of a supposed figurative log cabin, to rise to the White House, the man who came from humble origins, while Mitt Romney is the scion of great wealth. This supposed multimillionaire who's out of touch, who's had everything handed to him on a silver platter. In fact, according to Obama, wink, wink, Obama wasn't born with the silver spoon in his mouth. Boys, roll the clip.
Somebody gave me an education. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Michelle wasn't. But somebody gave us a chance.
Yep. Wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Obviously, he's implying Romney was. I have a column which has just come out. You can find it at times247.com. Times247.com by Jeff Kuhner, K-U-H-N-E-R. It's right there on the homepage. And I look at Romney's background and Obama's background. And let me tell you what the liberal media has not been telling you, and in fact lying to you for the last 3.5 years. Obama was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. First of all, on Romney, very quickly. Yes, his father made a lot of money, but his father was dirt poor. His father didn't even have a college education. His father literally picked himself up by the bootstraps. He embodies the American dream. And instead of taking his father's inheritance, Romney rejected it. And he went out on his own. And honestly, legally, ethically, he built up a vast fortune as a venture capitalist through his own firm, Bain. Now, whatever you think of venture capitalists, Obama worked in the private sector. He turned around companies. He created wealth. He created thousands and thousands of jobs. Whatever you may think about him, he may be stiff as a board. He may be inauthentic. He may not be the most likable guy in the room. He may not be the kind of conservative I go for or you go for. But say what you want about Mitt Romney, he got it honest. He worked in the private sector. But what about that con man in the White House? Mr. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Really? First of all, Mr. Obama, you were raised primarily by your grandparents from your white mother. You were raised in an overwhelmingly middle-class home. You never went hungry. You had a roof over your head. You had a shirt on your back. You had good meals. You went to some very good schools. And by his own admission, this comes from his straight from his autobiography. He was a C student in public school. He then went to Occidental College, C student. All of it paid for. By his own admission, when he was in Occidental College, he smoked pot. He was doing cocaine. He was snorting lines of cocaine, something the media won't even touch. And then, how does a C student suddenly get into Harvard Law? And not only get into Harvard Law, but is made president of the prestigious Harvard Law Review in an interview he gave to the school newspaper, as I point out in the column. He admits he was a beneficiary of affirmative action and racial quotas. He then goes on to Columbia. He then goes on becoming an adjunct teacher at Chicago. He then becomes a community organizer, getting one government grant after another. Then a state legislator in Illinois. Then a U.S. senator. And then he becomes president of the United States. Every step of the way in his career, he is living off the taxpayer's dime. And here's the kicker. Obama is a multi-millionaire. I looked at his tax returns between 2006 and 2011, just those 5 years. He and Michelle combined made nearly $16 million selling books, primarily his two autobiographies. Now, it's a free country, you can sell books. But what did Obama do? What every politician in Washington does. They leverage their public office to enrich themselves personally. That's what he did. So every step of the way, he's been spoon-fed. Usually at the taxpayer's expense. Usually on your dime. So, Mr. President, you're not part of the 99%. You're part of the 1%. You're one of the wealthiest Americans in America. You're not Mitt Romney country. No, he's not worth $250 million or north of $200 million, whatever Mitt Romney is worth. But believe me, he and Michelle will never go missing for a meal for the rest of their lives. She has blown nearly $10 million just on these constant vacations. They travel the world in the lap of luxury. This man has become one of the wealthiest, most successful Americans. And yet he stands there and acts like he's somehow Joe Sixpack, like somehow he comes from the people, like somehow he comes from these humble origins, that he somehow understands the middle class, but Romney doesn't? Whoa, 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 Mr. President. Whoa, 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 whoa. You are the very definition of a spoiled, pampered, liberal elitist who's had everything given to you your entire life. And so my question to you is a simple one. When Bush was president, people always said, I'd love to have a beer with W. Obama is portraying himself as a man of the people. Is he the kind of guy you'd want to have a beer with? Is Obama that likable, that personable, that much of an ordinary man, an ordinary Joe, that you'd like to have a beer with, or a Diet Coke with, or a glass of wine with? Or is he somebody that, frankly, I don't know, you would need to have a some kind of an expensive cocktail to even enter the room with him? Is he somebody that you would like to spend time with? Is he likable? Do you resonate and connect with him? Is he the man of the people he says he is? 1-800-449-8255. I want to hear from you. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. Juanita in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mr. Cooner, this is Juanita, and I think you're right that it's happening all over the nation, but this has gotten nationally attention because it all leads back to the White House. With Fast and Furious is getting too close to them, and they're trying to intimidate the committee, and this is the race card is used every time they're up against the wall.
Well, I mean, Juanita, look, you're talking about the Trayvon Martin case, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and look, all you need to know is this, and this is why I think he should have resigned. I think that Eric Holder should be gone. If he doesn't resign, he should be impeached. He is on the record as saying to his staffers at the Civil Rights Division that under my Justice Department, we will not prosecute black civil rights abuses of white victims. So he's admitted that under his Justice Department, justice is not blind. It's seen through a racialist lens. That's why they've politicized the Trayvon Martin case. That's why he won't prosecute the new Black Panthers for putting $1 million bounty on the head of George Zimmerman. And that's why he won't go after the new Black Panthers for blocking voters and intimidating voters at a polling booth in the 2008 election in Philadelphia. So Eric Holder, I'm very comfortable in saying this, is not running a proper Justice Department. He is a racist, and everything is seen through the lens of race. And they're using the race card to polarize this country in a desperate bid to win re-election. That's what this has been from the get-go. And I think that's why a lot of people don't want to sit down and have a drink with this guy. I mean, I was just telling this to Beowulf and the others during the break. What could you even drink with Obama? With Bush, it was a beer. What do you drink with a guy like him? A French cognac? What do you drink, a pina colada? What do you drink with this guy? John in Florida, very quickly, go.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I wouldn't have a beer with Obama. I wouldn't have a beer with him because he talks down to people. And like you say, what are you going to drink, a fruity tooty drink with him? You know? People, I wouldn't have, and I love beer.
Really, look, I mean, you could give me a case, literally a case of Bailey's Irish Cream or of Johnny Walker whiskey, and I'd still say I don't want to drink with this guy. Because, frankly, I know what's going to come out of his mouth before it even comes out. It's socialist garbage. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. The question before the House is, do you relate to President Obama? Can you understand him? Do you connect with him? Does he come across as a man of the people? There is now a column up, times247.com, where yours truly, K-U-H-N-E-R, it's right there on the homepage, where I look at whether Obama was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, because he now claims in Ohio that he and Michelle basically came from very humble origins, had it very rough in life, had to claw their way to the top. And I look at his past. I look at him in school. I look at him with his grandparents. I look at his privileged upbringing. I look at the fact that he was the beneficiary of affirmative action, a C student in high school, a C student in Occidental College. And all of a sudden, he's in Harvard Law. All of a sudden, he's the president of Harvard Law School. All of a sudden, he's going to Columbia University. Going to the best and brightest schools in the world, where a degree from any of those institutions is an automatic pathway to the upper class. Living off government largesse, living off the fat of the land, one grant after another as a community organizer, a state senator, a U.S. senator, a U.S. president. And then as he's climbing up American politics, selling one book after another, leveraging and using his public office, like most Washington politicians, to line his pockets, he made $16 million, he and his wife, from 2006 to 2011. He's a multimillionaire a couple times over. And suddenly he wants us to believe he wasn't spoon-fed. Suddenly he wants us to believe he's just an ordinary guy who understands what the ordinary folks are going through, and he wants to give everybody a, quote, a fair shake, when the system has been rigged in his favor his entire life. I'd like to have a beer with George Bush. I wouldn't want to have a drink with Barack Obama. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's pina coladas. I don't care if it's French cognac. I don't care what this guy drinks. Heineken, whatever. I don't care what it is. I wouldn't want to drink with him. Do you relate to him the way many Americans, at least on a visceral personal level, related with George W. Bush? They always said it. Say what you want about George Bush, agree or disagree. I'd like to have a beer with this guy. Chat with him. He's funny. He's interesting. He's got good stories. I'd like to know him more. Would you like to get to know Obama more? 1-800-449-8255. Tom in Connecticut, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I was a pilot all my life, and I flew heads of state and things like that, like J.D. Wolfenson, Paul Volcker, people like that. I'd like to have lunch with Obama. I think he'd be fun to have lunch with and talk about various things and maybe shoot a couple baskets. Though your boss there, Michael, comes out with a lot of things, I don't think he and I get along too well at lunch. You know, he's too out in left field for me. I don't know.
Tom, look, I got to tell you, having covered Obama, having seen Obama personally, and this is not political. This says he is, first of all, he's an extremely narcissistic man. He's an extremely cold man. He's extremely thin-skinned. He thinks extremely well of himself. He's profoundly insecure deep down. You can see it in his body language. I would not want to have lunch with him. Basically, what you see in public is what you see in private. He is a liberal socialist ideologue. He's somebody who's impervious to facts. He's impervious to logic. He's impervious to common sense. He's impervious to evidence. And if you want to understand Obama, it's the professors who taught me. It's the graduate schools that I went through. People were just full, literally. All my fellow students were full of people like Barack Obama. Many of them are privileged liberals who come from middle, upper middle class families. And they are shocked because everything's been given to them in their lives. They're spoiled. They're self-righteous. They're self-congratulatory. They're pampered. That they encounter the world and there's unfairness. And so why is there poverty? Why is there racism? Why is it that some people make more than others? This is not the way it should be. And so to assuage their guilt, they are literally ridden with guilt. They say, well, I must embrace socialism because that's my a way to expiate my sins. That's the way to expiate my guilt. The state will eliminate all social injustices. That's why if you look at Obama's presidency, literally he believes the state is like God. It can cure unemployment. It can cure the environment. It can cure pollution. It can cure the auto industry. It can cure the financial sector. There's nothing the government... It can cure poverty. It can cure anything. Anything can be done through the government. And that's a typical liberal belief. And so when you look at him, he looks at the American Constitution. He looks at American capitalism. He looks at the American way of life. And what does he see? Racism, exploitation, inequality, injustice. It's what his father believed in. In fact, there's a great story up on michaelsavage.com. Barack Sr., when Obama Sr., when he left Kenya on a student visa to go to Hawaii in Honolulu, came and both the British colonial office in Kenya and the American government said, this man, along with other radical Kenyan students, are anti-American and anti-white. They are radical anti-colonial revolutionary leftists. This man will hate this country. He's in fact in bed with Marxism and with the communist movement. That's what this essentially is. And they hate Europe. They hate Western civilization. They hate America. And they see the world essentially as a battle between minorities and whites. That the white world has oppressed the third world. And the root of that is capitalism. And the root of that is America. And Obama, in fact, even admits this. That's why his autobiography is called Dreams from My Father. He never got to know his father. He wasn't raised by his father. But it was those dreams that he inculcated from his father. What he is nothing more than the protege of Bill Ayers, of Bernadine Dorn, of Professor Derrick Bell. Bill Ayers grew up in a very privileged family. Bernadine Dorn grew up in a very privileged family. Most people don't know this. Most 60s anti-American, anti-war Marxists, those hippies on the streets, those anti-war activists, most of them were college students. They came from some of the wealthiest, most privileged families in America. The reason why they were protesting and doing drugs and having sex, because they didn't want to die in Vietnam. They didn't want their number called in the draft. Oh, somebody else goes. That's no problem. Look at them today. I don't see them on the streets protesting Iraq. I don't see them on the streets protesting Afghanistan because there's no draft. It's an all-volunteer military. The minute Nixon ended the draft, snap of a finger, like a switch, all of the peace marches stopped because they weren't going to die, because their lives mean more than others. They will not die for their country, and they certainly won't die fighting communists, because in their view, the communists were the good guys. That's what Obama deep down thinks, along with John Kerry, along with Bill Clinton, along with Hillary Clinton. We were on the wrong side of the Cold War. So to understand Barack Obama, it's very simple. He is a typical academic leftist who comes from a privileged background. He had a silver spoon in his mouth, maybe not the day he was born, but very early on when he went back to Hawaii and he was taken care of by his grandparents. And he has been spoon-fed his entire career, up to and including being president of the United States. And you think the more they benefit, the more good America is to them, you think they would at least be grateful. Look at his Secret Service. Look how they trash these Colombian hotels. Look at how he speaks down about America. Look how he keeps apologizing for America. What do we have to apologize for? That you got government grants? That you were given access to the best schools, even though you had a C grade? That you were given access to schools that, frankly, other kids deserved, but they were bypassed because they didn't have your, because they weren't black like you? They weren't beneficiaries of racial quotas? Is that it, Mr. President? His own wife in 2008? Now, you think about this. This is a lawyer making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, living in a home and in a neighborhood most Americans would envy, saying, for the first time in my life, I am proud to be an American. Really? Are you proud now, Michelle? 1-800-449-8255. Do you relate to Obama? Tom in New York, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff Cooner, Stars and Bars, filling in for Michael, America Savage. That's red, white, and blue dynamite, baby.
Thanks, Tom. What's on your mind, buddy?
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff, the problem I have is I would probably have a beer with him, and I would take one shot at trying to turn him around. But the problem is I wouldn't want to be in a foxhole with him or anybody else in that cabinet. Jeff, there's no character. What happened to character? How can Catholics vote for him? He's so anti-life. I mean, look at Kathleen Sebelius. Look at our Secret Service. Instead of guarding our president, a commander-in-chief, they're down in Colombia screwing around with prostitutes. What has happened to our country, Jeff? Where is the character? What do we vote for? Social justice has replaced life. Sanctity of marriage, sanctity of family. We're going down the tubes, Jeff. It takes a practicing Catholic like you. Maybe you can turn around the deadhead Catholics who are drunk in this country.
Tom, I'll tell you this. Catholics are going to come out in record numbers against this man. I think that contraceptive mandate has riled up the Catholic hierarchy like nothing I've seen in my lifetime. There is a federal funding of abortion embedded in the heart of Obamacare. Now, you have to understand this. This is a key point. According to Obamacare, most of you, under your health insurance plans, because many health insurance plans will cover abortion, whether you have an abortion or not, it doesn't matter. You will be forced, compelled, to pay $1 a month, $12 a year. It's literally called an abortion surcharge, to pay for somebody else's abortion. Now, don't ask me, as a devout Catholic, a devout Christian, a devout family man, to violate my most fundamental conscience rights that I consider to be a moral abomination, to use my money to pay for somebody else to murder their child. Slavery ripped this country apart. If you force people to pay for abortions, I'm warning you, you will see an ideological, cultural, civil war in this country. Catholics will not stand for it. And that's why I believe that was his fatal mistake. He thought he could destroy the Catholic Church. He can't. And come November, he's going to pay a big price. Dave in California, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you for taking my call. It's an honor and a pleasure. I've been a longtime listener, first-time caller. I just recently bought Trickle Down Tyranny, and I'm going to read it and pass it on. I could not have a drink with this man. I'd be afraid of him taking all my precious belongings.
he may fleece. First of all, I'll tell you right now, he'd leave you at the tap. What he would do is, I'm telling you, I know Obama. I know these liberals. First of all, he'd order the best that they could have. He would order these liqueurs, all right? I mean, it's like $50 a pop. He would order all these liqueurs. Then he'd say, hey, we got to have some appetizers. You just can't drink on an open stomach. Hey, since we're having appetizers, let's have some salads. Hey, appetizers, salads, let's have a whole meal. Well, since we're having a meal, I'm having myself a nice porterhouse steak. Hey, let's have a nice dessert. And then suddenly he'd say, I got to go to the bathroom. Hold on 1 second. I have to go to the restroom. My Secret Service guys are calling me. And before you know it, he doesn't come back. And you're left with the bill. That's Obama. That's what he's doing to this country. Leaving us with one big bill. 1-800-449-8255. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
But my main message is to the parents of Trayvon Martin. You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. And, you know, I think they are right to expect that all of us, as Americans, are going to take this with the seriousness it deserves and that we're going to get to the bottom of exactly what happened.
I wanted to say I am sorry for the loss of your son. I did not know how old he was. I thought he was a little bit younger than I am. And I did not know if he was armed or not.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. You heard Zimmerman today at his bond hearing. He's going to be released on bail, about $150,000. He'll be released in the next couple days. He apologized to the Trayvon Martin family. Do you think it makes a difference? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Kevin in Virginia. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
I'm good. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad I got through. I want to make a couple points. Being an African-American, I cannot understand how we have, as a community, have embraced him because he does not have the same experiences we do. Most blacks grow up in poverty. Me, being a resident of the Delta Belt, that's Arkansas, Mississippi, I grew up in a farming community, and he does not have the same experiences. Also, I would like to say, where is the black church right now? You know, being Americans agree or disagree on the issue of homosexuality, if George Bush had made the Supreme Court unbalanced the way he has, the black community, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson would have been screaming at the top of their lungs.
Kevin, you make some excellent points, and I want to thank you for that call, my friend. Look, where is the black community? Sadly, I think the black community has made a fatal mistake. And I think they have succumbed to some of the worst instincts that, to be candid, have afflicted the white community in the past in the South. And they've afflicted them, see, an African-American, and they say he's one of us. And so we're going to rally around him come hell or high water, regardless of the evidence, regardless of the facts. And I think they're paying a tremendous price. Gas prices up, food up, unemployment for blacks up. What has this man done for the black community? Zero. And if I were them, I would abandon him in droves. But that's just me. Fred in South Carolina, go, baby.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Jeff. And
my pleasure, Fred. I got about 20 seconds. Go.
Okay. No, I would never have a drink with Obama. You know, I mean, he's to me, a liar. He's lied about everything. And, you know, we're screwed.
No, you're right, Fred. I got to tell you right now, I wouldn't have a drink with him either. Worse, he'd stick me with the tab. That's the worst thing. 1-800-449-8255. We'll be right back. Jeff Cooner, Michael Savage.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. Michael, my buddy, I just want to thank you one last time for allowing me to fill in for you tonight. I can't tell you what a joy and pleasure and honor it is. And again, congratulations. Number two on the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list last week. Number three on the New York Times bestseller list. Trickle Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. Michael, I think it's going to be another classic. It's clearly heading to be another bestseller. I want to congratulate you, all of you out there. Go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com. For stories you will not find anywhere else. As we are now again being engulfed in the Trayvon Martin story, with George Zimmerman now at his bond hearing, openly apologizing to the Trayvon Martin family and taking the stand in dramatic fashion, as Obama is now playing the politics of race and inflaming racial tensions and pitting Americans against one another. Under his nose, while he was getting ready to go on a recent trip to a summit in Cartagena, Colombia, our Secret Service agents, charged with protecting and defending the President of the United States and representing the American people and this great republic abroad, crashed several bars, drank a ton of whiskey, allegations of potential maybe even cocaine use, and then went after Colombian prostitutes. Sorry, they're very touchy about this down there. Escort girls. Forgive me? Escorts. They're not prostitutes. They're escort girls. They're classy prostitutes. High-class prostitutes and strippers. 21 agents and military members have been implicated. In fact, breaking news right now, you're hearing it here first on michaelsavage.com. You can see it on michaelsavage.com soon, but you hear it here right now on the Savage Nation. Three Secret Service agents have now voluntarily and resigned. They have now decided to resign. They have fallen on their swords. This goes on top of three other agents who have been forced out. Five others have taken administrative leave. Heads are rolling. An investigation is now underway. And the question that I have is a very simple one. Why is it around this president nothing seems to work well? It's as if there's a culture of corruption that is spreading like a cancer across every sector of the government and every sector of society. Here you have the Secret Service going down to Colombia, getting ready for the president to come down, laying the groundwork for his security. And instead of doing their jobs, they hit the nightclubs. They hit the bars. And not only do they get sloshed, not only are they drunk six sheets to the wind, let me tell you what happened. They were at a bar, strip joint. There's a lot of women. Many of them are also used as escorts. And they're like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I'm going to take you back to my hotel. And she says, I want $800. And of course, when you're tanked up on liquor, it's like, I'll give you $800. No problem. Come back to my hotel room. So they go back to the hotel room. And it wasn't just one. There were up to 21 call girls, 21 hookers. It's Hookergate. 21 hookers in different rooms. And then one guy, and this is the guy that got all of his friends and buddies in trouble, he wakes up after a hangover, and they had a nice party in that house, in that suite, in that little hotel room. And he wakes up hungover. Now, this prostitute, how do I say this? It's a family show. She performed her services. She delivered on her end. Let's just put it that way. Well, now she tells him, I want my $800. And suddenly, Mr. Casanova, secret agent, James Bond, secret service guy, says, I don't have $800. I never offered you $800. Here's $30 for cab fare. Now, think of this. Just stand back for a second, okay? Leave aside that these men disgrace their office. Leave aside that they disgrace the country and the American people. Leave aside that they betrayed their vows, most of them, to their wives. Leave aside that it's illegal for Secret Service agents to solicit and sleep with prostitutes. It will cost you your job. It will cost you your career, everything you've worked for. Who then goes into a hotel hallway at 6:30 in the morning with all of this on the line? Leave the morality out of it. Just think of your naked self-interest and says, I'm not going to pay you more than $30. And of course, the prostitute is livid. And so she goes and gets the Colombian police. And that's another thing, which I don't get. In most countries, the police go after prostitutes. In Colombia, they defend the economic rights of prostitutes. It's like these cops are like their agents. The cops come back and they start arguing with the Secret Service agents, saying, no, you just took this hooker here, right? You slept with her, right? Pay her, gringo, pay her. And suddenly this guy's like, oh, my God, I got a problem. The prostitute is yelling. The cops are yelling. They want their money. Now other girls, other call girls come out. You can imagine the scene in this. And it's supposed to be a swanky five-star hotel. This is where the president's supposed to be staying. This is a nice place in Cartagena. This is a big tourist place. So now there's pandemonium in the hallway. Now, if I'm the guy, I'm thinking, my wife may leave me. I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to lose my career. Pay her. Get the money and pay her. He's haggling. No, $45, $50, $60. I won't give you more than $60. Finally, he agrees to $225. But check this out. Here's the kicker. He's got no money. He's got $30, $40. He starts asking his friends. He goes, I don't have any cash. His friends are coming out after they've had their little romps with the prostitutes. They get into their pockets. Okay, here's the $50 from Joey, $25 from Tommy, $225. She's off. And that's how this whole thing broke. Now, here is a New York Times reporter. I mean, this is almost like out of a novel. Michael, if you're listening, I know you're thinking of writing a second novel. This would serve as a great plot. You want to see how incompetent the Secret Service is? You want to see how incompetent our government is? You want to see how incompetent Obama's America is? Michael, this is beautiful stuff, man. I mean, this almost writes itself. Here is New York Times reporter William Newman. Now, he's interviewing. This is the escort. This is the girl that slept with the guy, the Secret Service agent that wanted to be paid. As she said it, baby cash money. Baby, I want my cash money. She wants her money. 24 years old. Single woman with, I think, a 9-year-old son. And so Newman says, he talks to her. And she says, look, I was at a nightclub. I'm approached by an American. I didn't know he was Secret Service. But he said, look, he was hitting on her. He says, you're a very beautiful woman. Let's go back to my hotel. And she says, well, it's going to cost you $800. Now, check out Big Shot. Big Shot says, oh, $800, no problem. Boys, clip 23, go.
She says that she met up with a small group of Americans in a discotheque here in Cartagena, and one of them was essentially hitting on her and said he wanted to be with her, and she says that she told him, well, that's great, but you have to give me a gift. And he said, well, how much is the gift? And she says that she told him $800. And then a lot of drinking happened, and at some point she and him went back to their hotel. And also there was another Colombian woman who hooked up with another one of the Secret Service agents, and they all went back to the hotel together. And the next morning, this woman asked for her payment, and the guy says he became angry, and he said, "I was drunk, and you can't expect me to pay that." And she insists, and he calls her names and gets angry and throws her out of the room. And there's sort of this bizarre scene folds where she enlists the help of this other prostitute and the other American, and they sort of knock on the door. She says they were discreet and, you know, weren't trying to make a scene, but they spend a couple hours trying to coax this guy to open his door, and according to her, he wouldn't even say a word.
This guy's a moron. Forget that he's a degenerate. Leave all that aside. He's a moron. This is me. Oh, I just slept with a prostitute. I'm hungover. I'm going to lose my wife, my family, my job, my career. Okay. How much do you want? How much do you need? How much? Just please leave. Don't cause a scene. Instead, he's haggling. He won't even answer the door. And so this to me shows, frankly, they got to start doing a better job of screening people at the Secret Service. That's number one. Number two, look at the lapse in security. We don't know. I mean, thank the Lord, this just turned into a big fiasco. What if they were sent by agents of Iran? What if they were sent by agents of China? What if they were sent by agents of the drug cartels? They know the president's schedule. They could use this to blackmail the Secret Service agents. They could use this to compromise national security and get at our top people in government. This, to me, is an absolute disaster on every level. And more than that, now think of this. 21 call girls, Secret Service agents partying like there's no tomorrow. What a signal does this send to the people of Colombia, to Latin America, and to the world? The decadent gringo. The arrogant gringo. Look at the arrogance. Just throws her out and thinks somehow nothing's going to happen to him. My friends, we have a serious problem with the Secret Service and the culture of corruption and arrogance that is sweeping every aspect of our government. And my question to you is this. Do you believe that this scandal, Hookergate, reflects badly upon Obama and upon America? 1-800-449-8255. Are you embarrassed by the behavior of our Secret Service agents? I want to hear from you. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel about the fact that these Secret Service agents, on taxpayer dollars, were running around in Cartagena, Colombia, having sex with prostitutes? Do you approve? Do you disapprove? Are you shocked? And more than that, do you think it reflects upon Obama's culture of corruption and arrogance? I want to hear from you. Tom in Houston, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff, it's depressing about the scandal with the Secret Service, people doing what they did. But it's also demoralizing to see our Secretary of State on tax. That would be Hillary. Chugging beers on taxpayers' dimes at the wee hours of the morning at the Havana Club down there in Colombia, and I'd love to know why she's getting a pass by the media.
Tom, brilliant, brilliant question and brilliant point, and it's something I raised a couple days ago on another show. Here is the Secretary of State going down for this supposed big summit in Colombia, talking with world leaders, and what is she doing? She's hitting the clubs. And think about it. It's very apropos for her. Havana, the Havana Club. Hey, in honor of Fidel Castro, the Havana Club. Very apropos for Hillary Clinton. Drinking, chugging beers, partying it up, dancing into the wee hours. And then what the media has not touched on is Obama at the summit was joking and saying, you know, I'm doing my own pre-planning here for a visit by Michelle because Michelle wants to do a vacation. So I'm kind of scouting out Cartagena and Colombia to see if that's where my wife and I want to come down for a nice little vacation a couple months from now. These guys won't stop partying. How many vacations is Michelle Obama going to take on the taxpayer's dime? Obama, every time I look, every 2 months he's on vacation. It's Martha's Vineyard. It's Hawaii. It's Key Biscayne. It's Spain. It's the French Riviera. Now they want to hit Cartagena, Colombia. Does anybody work anymore in that government? That's what I'd like to know. Is anybody working out there? To me, it's unbelievable. So what I think happened is this. I think a lot of these Secret Service agents said over the last couple of years, they look at Joe Biden, they look at Hillary Clinton, they look at the president, they see all this traveling, all this vacationing, all this partying. Nancy Pelosi, when she was House Speaker, how many trips she took, how much whiskey, how much booze, how much food was always being consumed on all of these flights with her staffers. And they're looking around and they're saying, hey, if they're all partying it up here in Washington, why don't we get a piece of the action? Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. We are going to get to our blazing phone lines in just a second, but first, you want to talk about the loss of common sense, the utter incompetence bordering on insanity in our government? Here is the piranha. Nancy Pelosi, the same one with the face job, who's always smiling because he's had so much facial work and Botox, she literally can't close her mouth anymore. Here is the one that helped ram Obamacare down the throats of the American people. The very same Nancy Pelosi, who is the most partisan, shrill Democrat you're going to find up on Capitol Hill, saying, you know, Obama has been too respectful of the Republicans in Congress. That Obama has been so respectful, she doesn't know what to say how respectful he's been. Here is Pelosi telling us that the problem with Barack Obama is that he's been too much of a bipartisan on too many issues. Boys, roll clip three.
The fact is, this president has been so respectful of the Republicans in Congress. He has given them every opportunity for the executive and the legislative branch to work together to have a solution that has bipartisan support. He's been criticized by some for taking the time that it takes to find out that they're never going to give him a break.
No, they're never going to give him a break. You see, the problem with Obama, he's been too nice. He's been too good. That's the problem. If I have one criticism of Obama, according to Nancy Pelosi, she's been too good. This is the same guy who rammed through health care, rammed through the stimulus, has polarized this country, demonizes Paul Ryan. He's turning Paul Ryan into a political monster. His surrogates are the ones calling anybody who criticizes him. You oppose high deficits, racist. You oppose socialized medicine, racist. You oppose amnesty for illegal immigrants, racist. Everything you oppose with this guy, you're a racist. But according to Nancy Pelosi, no, he's too bipartisan. He's too nice. He's too respectful. That's his problem. What planet are these people living on? You see, The problem with the Secret Service is that it's populated by the likes of the Nancy Pelosi's. Nancy Pelosi, if she was a female Secret Service agent, she'd be haggling in the hallway like that Secret Service agent guy was. She'd close the door, wouldn't talk to the prostitute. Wouldn't talk. And then, oh, okay, I got to do something. Okay, here's $30. Now leave. That's the problem with America today. Literally. We have idiots in government and in the Secret Service. You know, I hate to say this. This is a very depressing comment for me to make. But, you know, it's been said often, countries and peoples get the governments that they deserve. God help us if that's our case. God help us. 1-800-449-8255. Joe in Pittsburgh, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Jeff. Great to hear you filling in and everything. I'm not really embarrassed by the Secret Service issue as an American. I am embarrassed about it as a human being. It's 2012, and there are still first world people who choose to behave this way. I don't get it myself. And as an American, I think the real embarrassments are the fine lady we just heard, president, the vice president, the first lady. I can't be that embarrassed about the Secret Service after listening to these people.
Now, when you say that first world people behave like this, you mean as if we're coming in like an imperial conquering army, where we come and we just take, we drink, we take their women, we have sex with them, we mistreat them, we discard them, and we're shocked that people even complain, that the Colombians would complain.
More along the lines of, this is how, like, you know, the rest of the world tries to perceive us as behaving. When I see us actually behaving like it, I guess maybe it does embarrass me as an American a little bit. But with civilization and society where it is, this kind of thing should have been left behind a long time ago.
Oh, Joe, I agree with you on so many levels, and I want to thank you for that call. But here's the kicker. You want to see how symptomatic this is of modern-day America? Now, stand back. You're told. They have very strict guidelines on this. When you're traveling abroad, even domestically, you can't frequent prostitutes or hookers or call girls or escort services or whatever it is. You can't do drugs. You can't do all sorts of things. The reason being, it's not because somehow Uncle Sam wants to get into people's bedrooms. It's because you have to prevent Secret Service agents from the possibility of being blackmailed. Because if they're blackmailed, then that could expose the President of the United States to danger and to their colleagues to danger. That's why these guidelines are in place. Here you have. Now it's going to be 12. The latest now is there's a 12th Secret Service agent who's now been implicated. So it's not 11 now, it's going to be 12. Soliciting prostitutes, sleeping with prostitutes, getting drunk. Apparently, maybe even some of them were using cocaine. We're getting mixed reports on that. Disgracing their office, violating their oath, violating their professional standards. And guess what? You knew it was coming. One of them, one of the ousted Secret Service agents, is suing because he was fired. Can you believe that? Now, you think of that. Think of the chutzpah on that guy. I mean, this is me, the guy that's running the Secret Service. Let me get this straight. You go out partying, you get drunk, you bring a hooker back, you sleep with her, you don't want to pay her. You guys are fighting among yourselves. There's a big scene. You embarrass us, you embarrass the country, you embarrass the president. You break every possible standard and norm of behavior, every code of conduct. And now after we let you go, you're suing us? You're suing us. Are you serious? This is modern-day America. I've just given you modern-day America. There's no shame. There's no honor. There's no patriotism. Hell, forget that. There's no intelligence. I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'm telling you, this is Jeff Cooner. First of all, Jeff Cooner wouldn't be a Secret Service agent. Number one, because Jeff Cooner can't hold a gun. Jeff Cooner would shoot his own foot off. But that's never mind. Let that go. Okay, Jeff Cooner wouldn't go out drinking. Jeff Cooner wouldn't go out partying. Jeff Cooner wouldn't get sloshed. Jeff Cooner wouldn't solicit a prostitute. Jeff Cooner wouldn't sleep with a prostitute. Jeff Cooner would never have a cheat on his wife because he takes his marital oath seriously. But leave all of that go. Let all of that go. If it's 6:30 in the morning and I wake up with a prostitute in Colombia in a hotel in Cartagena and I'm drunk and hungover and I've just slept with this woman and I'm thinking, my God, my wife is going to kill me. I've lost my marriage, maybe my family. My career and my job are at stake. And this woman says she wants to get paid. You pay her. You don't haggle with her, stupid. And now they're going to start suing for unlawful dismissal. Can you believe this? This is our Secret Service. This is our government. This is why when conservatives like me say, shrink it, reduce it, dismantle it, cut it, people say, oh, Jeff Cooner wants to throw people out on the street. No, I don't want to see your money being squandered. I see this every day. Every day. There's one scandal a day up here. I often say this to people. I go, if you only lived here, if you only saw how your taxpayer money was being used, if you only saw, it's better that you don't know. In many ways, it isn't because it's too depressing. 1-800-449-8255. Are you embarrassed by the behavior of the Secret Service? And do you think it reflects upon Obama's culture of corruption and arrogance? I want to hear from you. Trevor in Arizona, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to make a point about Nancy Pelosi and her comments about how nice Obama is.
Go ahead, this shoot, my friend.
This is the guy who called the Republicans rather than the opposition. He calls them the enemy. And he also said...
One. And his surrogates. He's come out and said that they need to be punished. You're right. He's called them the enemy. He says that Republicans want dirty air, dirty water. They're claiming literally, they're claiming in some ads that Paul Ryan, because he wants to bring Medicare and Medicaid under control so we don't become bankrupt as a country, quote, he wants to push grandma off a cliff. Now, you think about that. Republicans want to push old people off a cliff. They want Americans to die, and they want you to drink bad water, polluted water, and they want you to breathe polluted air. Yeah, yeah, that's what Republicans want. But no, according to the piranha... The problem with Pelosi was with Obama, you just don't get it. He's too nice. He's just a guy trying to play too nice. He wouldn't take the gloves off. It's those awful Republicans. They just kept hammering him issue after issue. When in fact, they have tried to bend over backwards to work with this guy. On health care, he shafted him. On the stimulus, he shafted him. On the takeover of GM and Chrysler and the bailouts, he shafted them. On spending, he shafted them. On the contraceptive mandate, he shafted them. On cap and trade, he shafted them. I could go on issue after issue. On amnesty for illegal immigrants. Now, this is the latest pandering. No, it's not enough to play the Trayvon Martin race card. It's not enough to say there's a war on women. No. Now he goes in front of Univision, gives an interview, and says that Mitt Romney wants, quote, racial profiling of all Hispanics. Why? Because he supports Arizona's immigration law, saying that the state should be able to defend its own borders since the federal government won't. Now you think about that. Suddenly now Mitt Romney's a racist, according to Barack Obama. And worse than that, not only is he a racist, according to that con man, but he says, no, I want to give amnesty. I want to give everybody a pathway to citizenship. I want to reward all this law breaking. My party wants it, but that other party, they don't want it. Wink, wink, because they're all racist. No, because they believe that citizenship means something, that obeying the rule of law means something. There was once an expression in the 19th century. It was by the Rhodes Scholar was Cecil Rhodes, the man who helped found the Rhodes Scholarship. He once said this, that to be a British citizen was to be number one in the lottery of life. It's like winning the lottery. It's one in a million, and you're the luckiest person on earth. I believe that being an American is to be number one in the lottery of life. you have won the lottery because you have been given the privileges and rights of the greatest republic and freest country in the history of the world. You know why the overwhelming majority of Americans, black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter, oppose illegal immigration and oppose amnesty? Is because they understand that citizenship means something. It's an honor to be born in the greatest country in the world. You don't just throw it away. You don't just violate your laws. You don't just stand there and allow people to break it with impunity and then just reward criminal lawless behavior. That's why they won't give amnesty. But he won't deal with that argument. Instead, divide, conquer, play the races against one another, demonize, smear. And then in the end, like a typical leftist, after he smeared, libeled, and slandered everybody, he's the victim. He's the victim. He's a nice guy, according to Nancy Pelosi. You know what his problem is? He's just too nice a guy. He's just too good. He's just too good. That's all. He's got to be a little tougher like me from the streets of Little Italy in Baltimore. No, no. That's the way you got to do it. Put the knuckles to the pavement. That's the only way to do it. The hammer. Nancy Pelosi. My friends, what they are a bunch of political criminals who have been bleeding this country white. And it's about time we threw all the bums out. Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. Matthew in California, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mr. Cooner, thank you for filling in for the good doctor.
My pleasure, Matthew.
I got to disagree with you a little bit. I think this is to a certain extent a manufactured scandal, Jeff. Anyone who really is going to sit here and act like these individuals first shows from the get-go a very high-risk profession. They're risk-takers. They're alpha dogs. Anyone who thinks in their off time they're also going to let loose, party hard, go 110% like they always do in their job, and quite frankly engage in risky behavior is fooling themselves. I don't necessarily agree with the folks who are cheating on spouses. That's a whole other issue. But the idea that this has not going on among the ranks of the Secret Service and, quite frankly, a lot of government security agencies for years is absolutely preposterous.
No, Matthew, look, I think on that you're right. The Irish have a very funny but very, I think, perceptive expression. There's corruption and then there's corruption. Meaning, look, in politics, there's always some corruption. After a while, it's the scale and the degree. That's what breaks you. Look, I'm an historian. I'm a trained historian. John Kennedy was a notorious philanderer. The Secret Service covered it up for him. In fact, some of them even partook of some of the women that Kennedy was having affairs with. So this is not anything new. What is new, and this is the key point, Matthew, the media was not looking for a Secret Service scandal. It's not like they were there, you know, dogging these guys, looking for these guys, saying, oh, we're hearing these stories and we want to catch them. It's a gotcha. We want to practice some gotcha journalism. Their behavior was so out of control, so egregious, they lit up the hallway. They're fighting and arguing with prostitutes and police officers in the hallway. It was started with one prostitute, then other prostitutes began coming out. And there's a huge shouting match. And then everybody's in on it. And then before you knew it, the Colombian press was on it. Then the American press was on it. So my point is there was a complete breakdown in discipline, a complete breakdown in morale, a complete breakdown in common sense, a complete breakdown in leadership. And now what I think is this, mark my words, the way these men reacted, think about it. If this was a one-time thing or it was a more of a rare instance, they wouldn't have behaved the way they did. They have had, their behavior shows, it was their arrogance. Their behavior shows, we've done this many times, and we've told women to go fly a kite, and we've had our fun, and I'm sorry, we're not going to pay you, now get lost. and we got away with it. Well, this time they didn't. And I think the deeper you look into this, you will see that the rot is not just in the Secret Service. We're finding it now from the GSA. I mean, think about this. $800,000 has been spent on a conference in Vegas? Jacuzzis? Hot tubs? $1,000 champagne bottles? Lobsters? Porterhouse steaks? Mind readers? Clowns? Partying it up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning on our taxpayer dime? It's spreading like wildfire. And the reason why is this. The bigger government grows, the more corruption sets in. We are becoming like the ancient Roman Empire. And now we can't even protect our president properly? This is a scandal. This is an outrage. That's why I think heads have to roll. I understand we have alpha males. I understand you're going to have some guys that are going to party hard. But when you're on the clock, when you're on the job, hey, the president's 2 days away from flying in. It's not like this is, the president's coming 6 months from now. You have to be professional at all times. My friends, this is the tip of the iceberg. Trust me, many more agencies' heads will roll. Jeff Kooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. God bless you and God bless America. Savage.